Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, stock valuation. This is a lecture. Fortunately, this subject is pretty mathy, but you have an Excel spreadsheet for that will get you through this one, like I've brought you through the ones before this. And so the math, I will do examples, but I'll quickly scurry over to the Excel before I start making arithmetic mistakes myself. So that's something to look forward to. Now, remember on Wednesday, I'm going to surprise you with a quiz. So please act surprised when I give it to you. That will be on bonds and risk and return, not on the subject of today's lecture or Wednesday's. But those that will be for a future quiz. But keep in mind that you also have your Excel assignment that is now due in, I think, a week from today. So you've got to get on that because that's a drop-dead deadline for it. And there are no extensions. So make sure that you get it done and get the certificate URL uploaded, the correct URL for the certificate. And make sure that you keep an eye after you've uploaded it for your score in case there's something went wrong with your upload and I can't see your certificate on LinkedIn Learning or on Wall Street Prep or Udemy. But anyway, today was a bold day. And the reason is pretty straightforward. The government, White House, said that it was not going to escalate the war in the Middle East any further for now. And that was just joyful news because, remember, markets work on expectations of the future, not on what's happening in the present or what's already happened. So when markets saw this, their expectations adjusted to a bullish day. Now, that may not last. We probably will see a correction later this week. And if the escalation does occur, notwithstanding promises to the contrary, we will see the bear market turn, show its head again. We are definitely in a bear market. We are at the beginning of a recession. However, you can see good bull days, and this one was great on this side of the world. But interestingly, in Asia, it was uniformly a bear day. As you can see by over here, the Nikkei 225 was down a staggering 3.5%. That is a black swan that at that level. You're in black swan territory there. And the same Hang Seng was down about the same amount, 3.5%. Australia was down, but it then began to recover. And that tells me that we'll probably see a recovery in the Asian, on the Asian exchanges starting we'll see it tomorrow, but starting over there, they are already beginning to get close to sunrise over there. Well, maybe not. But tonight, those markets will open, and they may have a recovery tomorrow. We'll see about we'll see by Wednesday if that's the case. But in Europe, they had sort of a somewhat bullish day. It wasn't a spectacular day, but it was decent. The CAC 40, which is companies on the Paris Exchange, they were doing pretty well. DAX was doing DAX did a good job. And Euronext, really, really good day. So, well, not a real spectacular day, but up 0.2%. So we definitely have the makings of a decent day on this side of the world in Europe. And London, how did London do? I didn't check it earlier. Well, it was just barely down. It kind of bobbed its head above water, and then it kind of dipped back down. So it was pretty much flat for the day overall. But on our exchanges, The Dow was up a smart 1.86%, almost 2%. S&P 500 had a nice recovery day of 1.5%, more than 1.5%. And the NASDAQ, well, it had a good day too, 1.81%. So we are definitely seeing the bulls coming out of the woodwork right now. The troubling sign is that you still see a lot of movement of hard assets into more liquid assets. And that's true with gold, silver, I think even platinum took a whack today too. But down here, good news is that crude and Brent are both below $100, under $100 a barrel. Brent is at 98 and crude is at 87. That means you probably won't see much in the way of gasoline price increases for at least a while. That's good news for us. The one thing that is troubling, though, right over here, the 10-year benchmark treasury is at 4.33%. You've seen it when it was down in, it actually got down below 4% several months ago, but it's back up and it is going upward. And that is going to put a real stop on the economy. We're already sliding in the early stages of a recession, and with interest rates going up, that lowers the present value of future expected cash flows. That removes projects from consideration by companies. People don't borrow money to buy things like houses and cars. So that's the real dark cloud on all of this. But right now, really quickly, having a look over here, the sector map is all bull today. Green everywhere. Now, it's not dark green many places, but at least it's green. So this was definitely a broad-based rally today, from technologies to consumer defensives to healthcare, you name it, everything was up. Now, the technology stocks were not that dark green, so they weren't up spectacularly, although they were up pretty good. And but so we can have a look at a couple of quick views. For example, Apple, AAPL. Now, I want you to remember something. Before I do that, let me go back here and look at the how the stock market was doing. Oh, there it is. Now, the S&P, Standard & Poor's 500, is sort of what we use for, as a proxy for the world portfolio. And as you saw, that has a beta of 1.00. So that's kind of where you would see the return to the world portfolio right now, what it has done today. Now, let's go over here and have a look at a technology company like Apple, AAPL. And as you can see, it was up very strongly, just like the S&P was up. It showed the same profile. Remember that the beta is telling you the behavior of the stock relative to the market portfolio, the world portfolio. So since the S&P 500 is sort of the world portfolio, we would expect a stock, and this stock has a beta slightly above 1.00. So you should see this as a magnifier. So if the world portfolio goes up, on average, this stock should go up a little more. And as we can see, it did in this case. So that gives you an idea of what that beta is actually telling you about the real world of financial investments. Now, on the other hand, we can look at other stocks and see what's going on with them. And some were doing, there were winners, a lot of winners today, but there were some losers that are a little concerning. And other stocks that should have gone up more than they did. And among those, there's a big crisis happening in the fast food industry right now. Because fast food restaurants get their frozen French fries, which are one of their big revenue generators, or actually gross generators. They get them, almost all of them, from Canada. And that is a big problem because we pissed off Canada so bad last week that they are slapping an insane tariff on those French fries, frozen French fries they're sending down here for restaurants in the United States, for fast food restaurants. And I'm not talking about thousands of boxes of French fries. I'm talking about metric tons. Thousands and thousands of metric tons of French fries are going to just jump in wholesale price ridiculously. And that's going to be a major problem for the fast food industry. Wendy's had been having problems. There was no question that Wendy's had its share of problems, but it was at least breathing and it was kind of showing some signs of life. I had even thought about trying a little bit of investment in there. But as you can see, it didn't go up nearly as much as we would have, as the rest of the market did. Now, granted, notice that its beta is very low compared to the market at 0.38. So that means that it should not show as much strength up or strength down as the market does. So we shouldn't expect it to be any 1.5% like the S&P 500. But it certainly is disappointing how much it went up when so many other stocks were just roaring upward today. So that's something to look at over the long haul. Now, interestingly enough, there are other things that I can show you here too. For example, if we look over at Microsoft, another company hot in the technology, see how it did today. And it was up a very disappointing amount compared, especially considering, look at that beta. That beta is telling us it should have gone up a little more than the S&P 500 did, or another world portfolio proxy. And it barely made it up a third of a, well, now it's up a quarter of a percent. So that's a bad sign for Microsoft that even in a roaring bull market, it's not showing any sign, much of a sign of life. And so that kind of gives us a warning sign. These major days, does a certain stock go with that flow given its beta, or does it seem not to be showing that same life, that same strength? And in this case, that's telling me more about Microsoft than just that it went up only a quarter of a percent today. It's telling me that the market isn't really that excited about Microsoft anymore. And we can take that to other stocks too and look at them. But there are, on average, it was a strong day upward. And we can look even at bank stocks like Bank of America, take you to another sector and see how it did. Now, these stocks tend to have betas that are pretty stiff. And Bank of America did go up, but it certainly didn't go up as much as that beta tells us it should. So there again, it's a warning sign. Yes, it had an up day, but it should have had more life than it did, considering its beta and considering how much the world portfolio went up today. So that's something that will concern us. Now, another stock we can look at would be a bank stock, would be Citigroup. And Citigroup, look at that one. See how that one behaved with the market? It has a higher beta above one, and so its returns should be magnified, and they were on this day. So you're seeing two different companies, same industry, but with different reactions to a strong bull day. These are the kinds of things that you think about. I mean, you don't have to pull out paper and write things down, maybe an Excel sheet if you want to, but it's more of these sense of the market and its sentiments toward different companies, even in the same industry. So that's a kind of a tale for us to keep in mind as we go into the last weeks of the semester, and I'll talk more about those subtleties that we look at as professional investors, and that you can too, because you have had a course that taught you how to look at those numbers and say, what are they saying to us? I've said this famously, we don't really care so much about the numbers and how you calculate them as we do what they are telling us. And today will be sort of one of those days. Let me take this one off the road here. Now, I do have a spreadsheet for you to download, and I'm going to do a little tweaking on it this weekend. And by the way, I won't take attendance today. I want you to go to your files. And once you're there, I'll give you a chance to get your computers booted up and all that good stuff. You have seen my spreadsheets in action. All you do is get the numbers out of the story problem and put them into the right slots, and out come your answers. It was kind of funny, this past weekend, one of my better artificial intelligences that I've built, it has trouble with finance problems. And so I actually uploaded this specific sheet to it. I said, I want you to use this from now on. And sure enough, it was able to get right answers once it knew, oh, is this how you want me to do it? No, this is how it's done. So trying to save its own ego or whatever that is the thing has. Go to spreadsheets. Now you go down here to stock valuation. And you download it. I hope. Yeah, there we go. This one has a lot of moving parts in it. The thing of it is that all of this that we're going to do has to do with stock. Now, when most people say stock, what they are actually referring to is the most popular, the most typical kind of stock, which is common stock. By the way, you sometimes hear me use the term equity. But whenever we're talking about equity or stock, we're talking about ownership of the corporation. Common stock is, for lack of a better term, the most common type of stock. If you just say, I own some stock, it's pretty much assumed you're talking about common stock. But there is another kind of stock called preferred stock. It's preferred because its dividends are paid what before common stock dividends are allowed to be paid. But let me step back from this for a moment here and cover, I've said this before, but I would be remiss not to remind you that common stock is ownership. Well, actually, preferred stock is ownership too. There's an interesting difference though, because preferred stock, even though the holders are owners of the company, they are not allowed to vote in the annual elections for the board of directors. So you have the stockholders up here, and they elect the board of directors. Now, if it's normal common stock, each share gets to vote for each position. So if we have a very simple board structure where you have the president, the vice president, the treasurer, and the secretary, that would be about as simple as you can get. Each shareholder gets to vote, has one vote for each of these positions. Now, in some cases, you will have some charters allow you to concentrate your votes. Like in a case like, for example, you, sir, you have one share, and I'm the president, there's the VP, there's the secretary, and there's the treasurer. Say, vote for me. Give you, you get a share vote for each of those. But you could say, no, I'm going to vote all of my shares for someone to replace you, fat boy, as president, because you suck at the job. You could, in some corporations, just concentrate all of your four votes onto me as four votes for someone to replace me. That's not in every corporation, but it is in some. Now, there's something else that can go on too here. A proxy is the permission of another party to vote your shares. Almost, if you own any stock, you'll get a proxy in the mail. They'll say, assign your votes to me, and I will vote for this slate here. I'm sure that most times these guys or ladies or combinations have someone who is going to send out a proxy that is planning to vote for the incumbent board of directors. And you have the, you can assign your share, your votes to that proxy agent. On the other hand, you might also have a counter proxy, an outside group that says, give us your shares. Give us your proxy. And we're going to vote those bastards out because they're incompetent. We're going to take over the corporation in some kind of a hostile action. Now, later in the course, I'm actually going to tell you about hostile takeovers and white knights and black knights and poison pills. I'm going to tell you, it's actually fascinating to talk about, and some of the stories that come out of this are rather, in some cases, tragic or wild. But yeah, you could, you might get a counter proxy. I got one last year, a counter proxy, because I'd just gotten the proxy to, say you can vote my shares from the representatives of the current board of directors, the incumbent board. But then a day later, I got a proxy. I didn't even recognize the group, but they, it has to have a lot of information in it. We're going to vote for these people. And there was a letter with it just simply saying, we intend to take control of the board of directors and remove the current management of the corporation because the stock price hasn't done anything and we can do it better. We can do better. So yeah, proxies and counter proxies happen. Proxy wars are not that uncommon. Usually they fail, usually. But some, if they have wind in their sails, they can be quite expensive and interesting. But anyway, the board of directors hires the executives, the chief executive officer, the chief operating officer, chief information officer, or CTO, they call it sometimes, and they might have others, chief financial officer, CFO. They are the ones who hire those people. And then those people, the C-suite, hires everyone else or assigns it to underlings. So that's the chain of management of a corporation. The board of directors. Now, here's the thing, though. The dark side of this, and I've mentioned this a while back to you. It looks like this is kind of an ultimate democratic system. But 75% of all ownership of corporations is other corporations. They buy and own each other's stock so that when any company, any election of board of directors is decided not by the retail investors, the you and me, It's decided by other corporations. That's how it works. They are interlocking. Their relationships are a matrix, a complex, deep matrix of ownership, of interlocking ownership. So in theory, this sounds like it's a really democratic process, and we, the people, get to decide who's running these corporations. And they'll even tell us, if you don't like this corporation, what's the matter with you? You're the owner. You're the owners, investors. No, we're not. Not in the way that would matter. And again, this is almost all decided. The board of directors is decided by the boards of directors of other companies. And those other companies might also have members on your board of directors that are buying the stock of other companies in that matrix. It's deep, it's complex, and it's way beyond what we could ever explain to the people who are not like you or other business people. And even a lot of business people at the small level have no idea how this works. But yeah. So always keep that in mind when I'm talking about markets. When I say, well, it was a bull market or it was a bear market, that isn't average investors like you and me. That's actually corporations buying or selling each other's stock. That's how those markets work. Those at the retail level, I mean, you don't, it's the orders are blocks of hundreds of thousands of shares, and they just pound the market from the very opening bell in the aftermarket, the pre-market, they're hammering the market. Your order is, I bought 10 shares of Google. So what? They're going to fill the order, they're going to fill it quickly, and then they're going to go on to more important things, or they're going to go on to important matters. Anyway, that should brighten your day a little bit. But here's the thing, though, is that the stock, what we in finance care about, is not the current jigglings of the stock from day to day, hour to hour. We like to talk about them. We like to understand the motion, the movements, and the dynamics behind them. However, our first primary fundamental job is to invest for the long run, to look at the long run survival, prosperity, or decline of corporations. So when I say that I'm going to show you how to price stocks, I'm not going to show you how you can know what the price is tomorrow. I'm going to show you how it is down the road. Just like when I teach a class like this, I am not as interested in what you look like today. I want to know how you are going to perform over the course of a long, productive life. Because if I worry about you, how you are today, and whether you get a problem right or wrong, that denies both of us the opportunity to see what value there is in you over a long haul. Once you have kids, you'll know more about that. But anyway, look at this. Okay, stock. There's common, I'll put it over here, common, preferred. Now, the thing about preferred, if you remember what I talked about, is that it pays a fixed flat dividend forever. And that is great for us because it's very easy to find the present value of a future expected cash flow that is level forever, a level perpetuity. It's a simple formula, and especially no growth, in other words, level. That's the easiest thing in the world to find the intrinsic price of it. That doesn't mean we know the price from day to day. We know where the intrinsic price is going to keep finding its way to. Now I have to, before I begin the mathy part of this, I have to bring up something else that before I go any further. The going concern assumption. This is in accounting and it's also in finance. We make the assumption for somewhat different purposes, but it means this. a corporation is not going to end tomorrow. And the tomorrow, that tomorrow from there will not be the end. In other words, from period to period, the corporation will still live. And I've brought this up to you. Did you know that you're going to die? Yeah. You probably in a very ugly way, but anyway. No. The thing is that whatever your time frame is, and yours is very short, no, you'll live. You will die someday. I know that for a fact. I can't tell you exactly when. And you up there with that crap-eating grin on your face, I know that you're going to have an end that will be ugly. But, you know, you'll go out, I hope, in a blaze of glory. I watch too many YouTube fail videos. But the thing of it is that we are not like corporations. They have a fundamentally different component to them. They don't have a knowable lifespan. So in other words, that is important in accounting because that means that we can accrue expenses. We can accrue revenues. In other words, I don't have to have an accounting system that says you got a bill this month, it will be paid this month. I can use something called accounts payable. In other words, I know that there is going to be another month ahead of this one. And then when that month comes, there will be another month ahead of it. The same with accounts receivable. And all of those other things, there will be a tomorrow after every tomorrow. And that is actually, it sounds almost philosophical or something like that. It's not. Because in valuing, if we can assume that dividends go on forever, we have a way. We can telescope those back and say that's the value of the corporation, the present value of the future expected cash flow of dividends. We can do that. We're allowed to. So that's why this going concern assumption is so important to what we do. For accountants, it allows them to do accrual accounting. For finance, it gives us a way that we can find the intrinsic underlying value of the corporation and therefore the stock of that corporation. Now, I talked about common and preferred. Preferred, once the dividend is set in stone in the certificate itself, then ever after that, we know that that dividend will be paid every year, that same amount. The dividend coupon, it's a percentage dividend, and it's a percentage of the par value of the stock. We know that that amount of money will happen every year forever. Same with common stock. Once the dividends, we know or can project the dividends, we have a way to bring, we can bring those back as a present value of the future expected cash flow of the dividends, and we've got an intrinsic value right now. Before I go on any further, I should bring up these different kinds of common stock. There's common, there's preferred. There are other kinds of animals too. There is, for example, founder stock. That's stock that's given to those who actually started the corporation. I've had more than a few of my consulting gigs over the years. These founders of the corporation had given themselves just this insane amount of stock. And so any time they sold stock, it was going to be a very small percentage of the total shares outstanding. Because in this one case, it was tens of millions of shares of stock were in the hands of the three guys who founded the company. And there are other examples of that. I should point out that founder stock is an example of what is called restricted stock. Now, the restrictions are from Rule 144A. So sometimes you'll hear me say, well, that was Rule 144 stock, as a quick shorthand. In other words, they're not allowed to sell this stock except in very specific amounts at very specific times. They can leak stock out, but they can't just sell it wholesale. So insiders, yes, they can sell stock. They can have, it's through a special process that you get the restriction lifted from it on the opinion of a legal counsel, and then they can sell it. Now, interestingly, in some cases, what legitimately or not legitimately, a lot of times founders will use these Rule 144 windows to sell some stock just so they can keep going until they can pay themselves a decent salary in the company. And I've seen that, and it's understandable. In a couple of situations, I was actually, they asked me if I would be a consultant, and I gave them a price that nearly made them pass out. And they said, well, is there anything else? And I said, if it looked like it was going to make it, I'd say, yeah, I want some founder stock. So some of that consultant stock as a consultant. And so in a couple of cases, I did get some myself because they just couldn't afford to pay me. For a 6-month gig where I was getting everything in compliance with the SEC, I was hitting them for $100,000 and they just didn't have anything like that. But the stock, I figured, yeah, the stock might get to $12, $15 a share. So why don't you just give me 10,000 shares of founder stock? So yeah, it can be a legitimate way for the insiders to have something to tide them over until the company can pay. Okay, so that's founder stock. And there are other types of restricted stock too. In general, a company can't just sell stock to people. That's a quick trip to prison, a federal prison, and an insanely high fee before they take you away to that prison. So you can't just sell stock. But there are ways that you can raise money by selling stock to certain types of people. Like, for example, you, madam, you look like a very wealthy, sophisticated, indeed cultured individual. And you're also rolling in dough. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. Not really, but we'll pretend. Okay, so the thing, though, is that I, as the owner of a company, one of the insiders of a company, I could come to you and say, look, we'd like to have you invest in our company. Now, you could lend us money. That would be issuing you a bond, and we'd have to pay you back. Or we could sell you a private placement of stock. So if I wanted $1 million from you, I could say, look, we will issue you, let's say, 100,000 shares of stock. Now, that would be legal. It would be what we call an exemption because you are a sophisticated investor. And in certain cases, they're called Rule 1. There are a couple. There's a regulation called Regulation D, and there are several different ways, like 504, 505, 506. You don't have to know that. But that gives me the ability to sell to you as a sophisticated investor. However, your stock is restricted. You can't just sell it to someone else until we register stock with the SEC. But I can do that. And there's even a way where you say, I've got these friends around me, and I advise acquaintances, okay, frenemies, okay, but I could, if I know how, if I did the trick right, I could what's called bundle them under you so that they could participate in this because you are providing them with this sound financial advice. Investing advice. So there are ways that you can bundle underneath a sophisticated investor to get more punch, more money in that way. But again, all of you would have stock, but you couldn't just dump it. You'd have to wait until I registered it with the SEC. And usually I would piggyback that under an IPO. So in other words, I'd be selling stock to the public, but I'd also be lifting the restriction under Rule 144 of those private placement investors. That's something you gotta watch out for. These IPOs, you look inside of those documents, you will see that quite frequently they are not just registering the stock that they sell to the public. They're also registering all of this insider stock that was formerly restricted at the same time. So you've got to be a little careful about doing that kind of, investing in IPO. Truth be told, I did an IPO once where it was for 5 million shares of stock. It was 5 million shares of stock at $5.75 a share. But at the same time, I was registering, they had done like three private placements, and it was close to a million shares. So that wasn't a $5 million going out there and starting to trade. It was almost 6 million shares going out there to trade. That's a little more on the sophisticated side. And if you're more interested in this, you can take my section of FIL 242 to get a little more knowledge about these kinds of tricks out there that can happen on you. Okay, however, taking this back, there's the founder stock, and I've mentioned a few others. There's like the classified, I think the book calls it lettered stock, where you have different classifications. You've got Class A shares, and you've got Class B shares. The Class A shares are insider shares. They have supermajority voting. So you may have one vote per position. They'd have 10, 50, 100 votes per position. So that they have control of the corporation's destiny. That's an interesting thing, though, about this. Class B is the share that you would buy typically. You have voting rights. Interestingly enough, Class A doesn't get dividends. Only the commoners, the Class B, gets dividends. So there's the upside with the Class A that you control the board of directors. But the downside is you don't get dividends. That's only for the Class B shares. So that's another thing. And I also mentioned at some point, and I don't know why I even do because it's so rare, is what's called tracking stock. Tracking stock is stock of not a company, but of a division within a company. It tracks only that division's wins and losses. It's weird stuff. And generally speaking, it's a real bad idea to buy it unless you are playing it for a short run. Because I mentioned to you before, at one time, Sirius XM had a tracking stock on one of its divisions. Lowe's, the home furnishings company, they've had three or four tracking stocks over the years. One of them was even for some kind of mobile telecommunications division, and I can't even find that tracking stock anymore. But yeah, they can have a run-up after they're issued, but at the same time, they don't seem to have much of a survival life at all. But that's another one. It's kind of rare. Just be cautious about those. Always check to make sure when you're buying a stock that you don't recognize, that you do some research to make sure you're not buying a tracking stock of some kind. Anyway, all that aside, we are looking for ways to find the present value of future expected cash flows, specifically dividends. Now, the easiest one to find is the dividend of preferred stock. And again, we are finding intrinsic value, not the value from day to day, because I'll actually show you why the day to day can be volatile. But first of all, we have a formula, and I showed this to you when we were doing present values. It's called the present value of a perpetuity. A perpetuity is a forever cash flow. Now, we have a formula for level perpetuities. In other words, it's the same amount every year. And we also have a formula that's for constant growth perpetuities, where the amount grows at a known rate every year forever. Now, the one for no growth is very easy. It's the current price is going to be the dividend of it over the required rate of return, what the market says it should be returning. Now, and I'll replace this D. Once you've got that noted there, I'll just replace div with just a plain old D. So, for example, ASJ 3.5% cumulative preferred par value $60 per share has a current required rate of return of 3.8%. We can find its intrinsic price very easily. The thing of it is, just notice that the market is requiring 3.8%, but the dividend is only 3.5%. So we should expect this stock to be selling at a discount to par. Let's see. The price right now should be the coupon 3.5% times par value. That'll be the dividend, the div on the D on top, divided by the required rate of return, 0.038. Now, what I'm going to do is bring this up on a calculator to do it, and then show you how to do it on the spreadsheet. So with a calculator, all I would do is say 0.035 times $60 per share divided by. Notice that what I got on top, that's the dollar value of the dividend, $2.10. You own this, you'll get $2.10 every year forever. And then I divide that by the required rate of return, 0.038. And I should get something a little less than $60. Sure enough, it's $55.28 per share. Because the market wants more than the coupon pays. So this preferred stock will sell at a discount to par. Watch what would happen if the market's required rate of return was lower than what the dividend was paid, what the dividend paid. In that case, I'd have 0.035 times the 60. So there's your dividend, $2.10. But now we're going to divide it by a number, by a percentage that's below the coupon, 0.032. Now, this time, it should sell at a premium to par. There. Yep, $65.63 a share. So this model, again, this is intrinsic price. Now, here's why the market price will be not this hardly ever. It's because of that required rate of return. The market is constantly, by the hour, the day, the week, or whatever, redeciding, reevaluating what it expects, what required rate of return it wants. And that will just be all going up and down day to day as different sectors of investors go in, go out. Some will want higher, some will want lower. So that's what is underneath that pop up and down and up and down of the market price. What this does is tell us where the tendency is, where it will find its ground. Not that it will ever necessarily see that, but except for maybe a few minutes, but it's always on the move. And notice how macroeconomics kind of plays in here. Remember I was showing you how the bonds are going up in yields right now? That'll bring up all interest rates, required rates of return will all go up. And so that will tend to, over a long period of time, drive stock prices down because the required rates of return are always in the denominators. So let me show you this one. Now there's a version of this where we have a constant growth dividend, and I'll talk about those in a minute, where we have a constant growth. This one will be a generalization of this formula, allowing for the possibility that the dividend grows at a constant rate year over year. And I'll talk about that in a minute, but let me show you the formula. P0 will be the dividend right now, the current dividend, grown one period, divided by the required rate of return minus the growth rate. That's a more general formula, and it actually does apply to a certain type of stock. But for this one, let me just do the preferred stock that has no growth in it. In a case like this, we go to the constant growth rate model. So what we'll do here is we're going to say, okay, the discount rate, what did I say it was originally? It was 3.8%. Now, if it is a preferred stock, it has a zero growth rate on the dividend. And the dividend was just, I'll just calculate here, equals 0.035 times the $60 par value. $2.10. Look at that. Just remember that for preferred stocks, you make a zero for the growth rate. For preferred stocks, you make a 0% for the growth rate, and that's all there is to it. As a matter of fact, I can even go back up. What if the market's required rate of return is 3.2%? 3.2%. Sure enough, it just spits it out. That saves you having to do that formula. Now let me talk about constant growth rate dividends. The thing here, and I'll give you a little story, and I think I already told you this one, but in the consulting jobs I had some that lasted literally less than a day, and I had some that lasted a long time, years. And there was something that came up a couple of times in these companies that had made it through those god-awful first couple of years. They were getting on their feet and they were feeling like, yeah, we've got something that's working here. The board of directors meeting, someone brings up, is it time for us to pay our shareholders a dividend? And you know, the thing was that, you know, the stockholders were bitching. We haven't seen a dividend. You're saying that you're making money, but where is some for us? And the thing of it was that the answer is complicated. I'd say, okay, on the one hand, giving the stockholders a dividend is a great idea. However, we had a good year. What if next year we don't have the money to give a dividend? You've set up their expectations and then you've made them mad again because you're back to the way it was in the old days. So first, you've got to be sure that you can provide a dividend. And then the next thing is that they're going to start wanting you to give them the same dividend. So you're not paying them $1.20 dividend 1 year and then 35 cents the next year. The next step is to stabilize the dividend. And finally, the last step, the step that is done by old corporations, you start constantly growing the dividend. You set a constant growth rate, and then every year the dividend grows by that amount of money. That's a constant growth dividend. Now, some years back, I'd been teaching this for a long time, and I thought, do companies, old companies, really do this? Do they grow the dividend at a constant rate every year? Sure enough, I went through 10 companies, and 9 of them had a constant growth rate dividend. You know, you take dividend in year 1 divided by dividend in year 2, then dividend in year 2 divided by dividend in year dividend year 3 divided by dividend in year 2. Sure enough, older corporations do, give or take a little bit, have a constant growth rate dividend. It's the ultimate sign of the maturity of a corporation, that it can not only pay a dividend, not only does it pay the same dividend, it actually grows that dividend every year. So this model here will accommodate that. I'll give you a problem that shows this trick. CKZ just paid a $2.25 per share dividend. That is expected to grow at a rate of 1.75% per year for the foreseeable future. The required rate of return, the discount rate, is 8.2%. You do it by the constant growth formula, you would put it as the intrinsic price is the current dividend they just paid, $2.25, grown 1 period at 0.0175 over 0.082 minus the growth rate of 0.0175. That's the formula to do it. This model, the constant growth rate model, will do it for you. In this case, we have a discount rate, what did I say, 8.2%. You have a growth rate of 1.75%, and the dividend was $2.25. So the stock's intrinsic price is $35.49. That's all you do. Just take the numbers out of the word problem, throw away the words, and get your answer. That's all there is to it. And the ones that I'll show you on Wednesday, the math looks hairy and scary, but all you do is put the numbers in and let the thing do its go by itself. Let it run its own game. Now remember that in these problems, you don't ever touch anything that is not a white cell. Now here in the first tab is kind of one where you buy a stock, you get the dividend for a few years, and then you dump the stock. So in one like this, the one in this example, you bought a stock, you got a dividend the first year of $1.90, a dividend the second year of $2.35, you got a dividend the third year of $2.75, and then you dump the stock for $15.89. With a discount rate of 6.95%, that's the price of your stock, $19.07. Now, the last thing that I'll tell you is this word right here called the horizon value. This is an important word for the scary problems. Horizon value is the value of the stock at some point in the future. In other words, it's a value out there on the horizon. This is a value that we can calculate or that is given to us. In this problem, I'll just give it to you, the horizon value. In problems later, it's something that is calculated. But fortunately for you, the worst of the models looks like this. You get unstable dividends for a period of, in this case, 5 years. But then at year five, the dividend policy stabilizes to a constant growth rate. So what you do is you find the present value of these unstable dividends, and at the horizon, you calculate one more period out, just like you do in those formulas. You grow that last dividend one more time, and then you use that to find the present value at year five of a perpetuity. And then you just get all these present values, gather them up, and there's the price of the stock. You don't even have to think about it that way. All you have to do is put in the dividends I give you. And then you put in the discount rate and the growth rate, and it will do the present value mess for you. Now, I gave you one here that's 5 years to the horizon. And this one over here is 7 years to the horizon. They're the same, basically the same model. It just gets to be so tedious finding all these present values and then growing the dividend one last time and getting the horizon value over here. That's where Excel is at its best, is doing ungodly tedious work. You just put in the numbers and let Excel do the calculation. And that's the entirety of chapter 9 in the book. And I'll cover a couple of problems doing this one on Wednesday, and then you'll have a quiz. But for today, that's all I have for you. I thank you. And again, there is no attendance today.